Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So some more of this Spolkowski guy regarding free will, which, you know, bad words really. It's just about whether we're robots, that is, programmed. We don't really make choices, we make decisions, and we just make those decisions based on bullshit that we've acquired. That we're shaped by an environment, and that environment turns us into something, pretty much. We're just molded, manufactured by circumstances into a shape, and that becomes our personality. So lots of, you know, we do live lots of years and lots of days, and, you know, so lots of time for all that to happen. Now, just now, I was thinking before pressing the button, you know, to make this video, that, yeah, it's going to be a different video. I pressed the button now, you know, then. It's one kind of video. I press it 30 seconds later, it's a different video. 30 seconds later, different video. I mean, you know, probably entirely, you know, in some ways, very different. Some ways, not so different, but I just mean, you know, it's going to be different. And that's how much noise there is in this environment of identity and personality. It's all just catching things, you know. In one moment, it's, you know, one shape. In the next moment, it's a different shape. And that's part of the sloppiness of it. So even though it's very robotic and determined, there's so much, there's so many little tiny variables that, yeah, you can't tell how it's gonna, you know, each roll is a roll of the dice. And, yeah, you wait 30 seconds, the roll is different. You know, you end up with a different outcome, even though the probabilities are determined, the outcomes of individual permutations are not. Anyway. So that's sort of going in. It just adds to the complexity of talking even about it. Is there's so many directions you can come at the subject, and trying to get to this, you know, what I would say is sort of one of the brighter spots, the places that are the bigger, the more important conversations. Just about how, when we live in a world that's the same world, we're all living in it, it runs on pretty, you know, pretty fixed dynamics, you know, pretty, you know, this whole physics thing, you know, certain rules about function, and yet, people can have all kinds of wacky different interpretations of these simple things. You know, nothing is understood the same way. You know, you say battery, and then some people understand that, oh yeah, well, this is a lithium battery, so it's a bunch of rolled paper, you know, with a little bit of goop on it. And then I can show them another battery, and they'll say they know it's a carbon battery. And then other people just say, well, this one's longer and thinner, and that one's fatter and shorter. Then some people know it's 3.7 volts, and they'll know the other one is 1.3 volts, you know, this kind of thing. And so, you know, there is some variance in how we understand the world, in terms of how deeply people understand something. But again, you say, you know, this is sort of simple, but we're existing here. We're on this, okay, surface. Now, you know, another thing I would just happened to think of it was flat earth, and I was thinking about, you know, because this guy's going to say something, this econ guy, that is so stupid. I mean, it's so profoundly ignorant that you're saying, how does he function in the world? I mean, how does he even put his glasses, you know, you'd think he'd be putting them on upside down. You know, how could he possibly have a talk show? How could he possibly know something about an econ? You know, how is that possible? And he could be this stupid. I mean, to have an idea so insanely stupid. that you're just like, no. I mean, this doesn't fit. And then you have to make it fit by realizing, oh, it's psychology. And so, you know, he's become a member of a cult, you know, a religion. You know, to defend the religion, to make the religion capable of being supported, he has to have a bunch of silly notions, or, you know, he can't argue it, he can't defend it, unless he presumes a lot of retarded things are true. Really stupid things. So the point is again, I marvel, okay, at the fact that we can be so diverse and yet, you know, round, square. So anyway, the flat earth thing was, I was thinking about the moon, and I was thinking, well, come on, for a long time now, you know, since Galileo anyway, you know, we've had pretty good images. I mean, they've been able to image the moon, been able to look at it, and it's pretty hard to look at it with a telescope and not say it's a sphere. I mean, it looks like one. I mean, it's got all that shades on the outs, you know, on the edges. You know, it just has every appearance of not being a flat, round thing. You know, so why wouldn't I understand the notion of sphere and figure out that, yeah, this is probably a round thing too. You know, and just the impossibility, frankly, of thinking of a flat earth and saying, what, and we never found the edge? I mean, in all the time that, you know, we've been doing this being on earth thing, nobody found the edge? You know, that's a little hard to believe also. Now, the fact that there was water, technically, you know, every continent has water surrounding it, maybe, but even that argument kind of fails, because, you know, we kind of know that every continent probably has some little land bridge somewhere, you know, except for like Australia. But anyway, it just doesn't add up to why people cling to really dumb ideas. And the bottom line is yeah, that's all you're doing here, is fighting dumb ideas. Right? Yeah, there's nothing. There's just extracting stupid from the conversation, and then when everybody's got stupid out of their brain, then you're all going to, well, going to say the same thing about how, which direction to drive the car. You know, there's a road and white lines. Let's just stay between the white lines. You know, it'll become very uncomplicated once you get stupid out of the way. But it's everywhere. You know, that's the part that doesn't make any sense. How does stupid get into, you know, reasonably functional brains? And that's the real question. How does stupid get into brains that appear to be able to do their job? You know, I mean, it's a Coke machine. It seems to work fine. And then every now and then it spits acid in your eye. And you're just saying, where did that come from? How the hell is it even doing that? All right, so let's play some of this. So this is Spoltowski. He's basically saying Spoltowski, something like that anyway. Sorry. Not much of a name guy. So you know, he's making some sort of response that almost indicates he gets it, that this thing called change happens to people, and that different people can end up differently affected. So this is like as simple as, okay, yeah, I've used these kind of metaphors before, but let's just say as kids, you're going for the first time, your family's traveling all the way to Disneyland, blah, 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 it's going to be this wonderful adventure, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, at the gas station before you get to Disneyland, one of the kids gets a whiff of fumes and it gives them a headache. So now he has a headache, and it's a bright sunny day, and oh, you know, it's just not going very well. So he has a miserable time, you know, just miserable. Now that is going to make him more risk averse in the sense that, yes, in the future, he's not going to tend to be all that enthusiastic about something that smells like the same adventure, you know, even something that has a gas fume associated with it or something. Because that's his conditioning. That's how he's been train by experience. So it's just like training a dog or something and making these associations and, you know, reward and punishment. And that will, you know, so what whips different people, okay, whips them because of their personal experience. And what rewards them, you know, rewards them based on their personal experiences. And so, you know, I'm just thinking of different kinds of, you know, the people in the past would, you know, kill animals, and then I guess they had to make some sort of manly ritual, you know, out of the, you know, gutting the animal and cutting into pieces for dinner. And, you know, somehow they had to make all that some sort of fun thing, you know, something to be proud of and all that kind of stuff. But clearly you could do it exactly the opposite. You know, clearly you could make the experience completely negative in terms of highlighting the cruelty and the brutality and the ugliness of it, and pointing out how, look how miserable our life is, that we have to do this to a poor little creature. You know, so you can make the experience two different things based on how you perform the play, so to speak. You can say the same words, but you can say them in a different context, okay, that makes them positive or negative. All right, it's probably... Yeah, no, we'll start here.
100 years ago in a different part of the planet, so let's see if I could do that more and feel empathy for everybody else. And somebody else will say, okay, that was cool. Wow, what an interesting...
So he's talking about the difference between people who something they're triggered, okay? And so some people are very inquisitive and wish to learn more and wish to understand more completely, and some people are, yeah, who cares, I'm not really interested. Where are the white women at? You know, they're just looking for something.
Bizarre chapter's history, and that's the end of it. Why does one person say, I want to learn more about this? Where do they learn how to read? Where do they get respect for reading as a means for finding out about the world? Where do they have the emotional temperament to think that I might...
So all of that, it just seems like this should be a bare minimum. I mean, not that you have to be able to read, but that you understand there's stuff to learn. You know, that, like, even hundreds of years ago, there's people that had skills. You know, people could make furniture, people could blacksmith, people cooked. People did this stuff, and you could know they did this stuff because they had acquired a knowledge of how it works. You know, how stuff works and how to manipulate it. Why would there be any excuse for... you know, an immature robot to think it was possible that they go through life without acquiring any skills and without being in any way functional. Like, all the other robots are doing something and functioning. Why would they think they could somehow get away with not doing anything, not knowing anything, not learning anything? And wouldn't a robot so uncurious, one that doesn't even want to know, you know, who doesn't even want to know how the clock works or how this works or how that works, you know, that's one you probably should have aborted. Yeah.
Change my fundamental opinions about something based on outside information. Where do they get the attention span to be able to read that they don't have an attentional disorder, where, et cetera, et cetera.
So he just has excuse after excuse. So it's all about why are people stupid, and it's because they have a ton of excuses for being stupid, you know. When you could argue again that the it's so obvious and elemental that, you know, they're stupid because, again, it's not fun for most people to have to learn stuff that's as soon as it gets a little complicated. Off the top of my head, I really can't say, okay, this is the reason why some subjects are tedious and difficult to learn and some subjects are easier, or why you enjoy some subjects more than other subjects. Obviously that's true for different people, but there always should be something you find interesting.
etc.? And where did they have the empathic capacity to decide that one?
All right, so empathic capacity almost sounds like a real, you know, that's almost spirit talk. When, yes, the empathy is just a realization of, you know, recognizing the do unto others things that should have others do unto you in a way. It's just basically recognizing that, yes, I can imagine myself in a circumstance. So the empathy is sort of cheating. I mean, you really can't have empathy in any kind of honest way. It always ends up being empathy for something that's cute or something you're attached to or some kind of your possession, and you want to keep your, it's like keeping your, waxing your car. You're not doing it for the car. You know, it's not an act of empathy. And so some people will feel their pain, you know, but only in this context of, you know, how much they can identify with that person rather than just the gross recognition that it's doing the same thing I'm doing. And it's very easy for me to understand myself in its position. So, therefore, the grace of God, kind of argument, that this is not, it's not, it's such a, these are catchphrases because they were sort of common knowledge. And you'd almost argue, how could all that stuff be common knowledge and then us talk about people who don't have empathy? Because, frankly, it shouldn't be that complicated to at least acknowledge the fact that broken legs are painful, that dying of a disease is unpleasant. This shouldn't be hard to do.
Person's pain might work just the same way as somebody else's person's pain, even though every bit of cultural symbol the other person carries is yelling enemy or alien or whatever. How do they get the means to extrapolate to that? You can show elements of that in five-year-olds already and elements in that of how their brain responds to novelty.
Yeah, so I hate this word, novelty. How their brain responds to novelty. What is that? They got a machine that does that? The novelty brain reaction tester? I mean, that's just... yuck. But yes, this whole idea that we're, you know, come on. It's not about genetics. It's just really, come on, it's unfortunately he's doing a book on free will, but he's doing a lot of conversation, you know, his conversation has in it a lot of what should be a long dead subject of this nature versus nurture thing. It really is, you know. I mean, the amount of variables that are controlled by nurture, I mean, nature can, you can be born blind, for fuck's sake. You can be born deaf. There can be real deficits that make it impossible for you to, you know, expand your capacity because of those limitations. But frankly, outside of that, it's all nurture. You can take any baby and turn it into almost anything. I mean, obviously, if the baby's not going to grow to be 6 feet tall, you're probably not going to be able to turn into a basketball player. But come on, within reason, it's all very moldable clay.
And, like, two people in seemingly the same circumstance do dramatically different things.
And I think they do dramatic different things because they were introduced to something in dramatically different ways. Again, I could introduce somebody into this process of let's go out and shoot a little animal and then, you know, slit open its belly and pull out all its organs and then cut it into little pieces and, you know, pop its eyeballs out and laugh. Or, you know, I'm just saying that I can introduce them to that in two distinctly different ways. In one way where I can make it absolutely horrifying, and another way where I make it a rite of manhood and and, you know, courage and, you know, be tough and, you know, deal with life as it is and, you know. It's the same event. I can just propagandize in two different ways and create a completely different human being who finds it quite comfortable because it's fun, okay? It was always a fun experience versus the, you know, a challenging, you know, like a video game, okay? Or I can make it something just completely disgusting that completely disengages the individual from any will to live, you know, frankly. Because they find out that they're Nazis and they're on the wrong side and they're, you know, it'll just be so dismal a realization that they're in a war and they're fighting on the wrong side. Now what the fuck do they do?
All sorts of heavy-duty implications, perhaps. And why did they differ? Because each one had a different 1 second before one.
Right, so it's the 1 seconds before and the 1 hour before and the 4 days before and the 10 years ago before and all of that crap that really, you know, beats the crap out of us and, you know, pokes all the dents and makes us into the little monsters that we are.
Hour before, etc.
So that's a, as I suggested, I think earlier, a dismal view of the human experience. I mentioned on the program before the idea.
So what? Yeah, okay, the fact is that you're on a planet actually where all these animals are eating each other every day. They chase each other down and eat each other. And we're privileged that we've been able to separate ourselves from that. We don't have to watch our kids die that way. We don't have to do a lot of these horrible things that the other animals still are stuck in. And that is a dismal truth. And the fact is that why should I even have a conversation with people that won't even acknowledge that truth exists? And this fluffer is one of these people who doesn't even acknowledge that truth.
That, you know, if you watch a sparrow and it flits about, sparrow's brain is, you know, the size of
a... It flits about, you know, and miraculously it builds a nest, lays eggs, feeds its young, does all of that stuff without any technology at all. All on its own. No help. Know anything. I mean, a miraculous functionality. You couldn't do it. You couldn't even do it. You couldn't even raise its young. If you had to sit in a tree and do it, you couldn't do it. All right? And it does it. All right? It flies. Okay? It catches food. It does all of this stuff and evades all kinds of predation, all kinds of things trying to get it, from the little tiny bugs to the big giant predators. And it survives all of that, and you'd call it flitting about. I'm just saying, see, in the context of what he's going to say next, this is just why I'm reacting to this word. It's just, this is the attitude. This pompous, pious horseshit that human beings are so fucking functional. I mean, just, there's a little tiny ant in this cup. This ant is, you know, they're probably the smallest ants in the world, right? They're, you know... I don't know, what, half a millimeter? Tiny little frickin' ant. And you're saying, okay, look, just think about how small its fucking brain is. And if I had a 3-pound jar of those brains, so not just the ants, but just the brains, and you're just saying, just think how much it's controlling. I mean, antennas, 6 legs... It can build a whole hive, they can heat it, they can do all this stuff they need to do, they have all this stuff pre-programmed inside of them, all of this functionality, incredible amount of functionality in a minuscule tiny, I mean, it's just such a, their brain is so small you couldn't see it if it was on my finger, couldn't see it. And you people think you're just so fantastic. Oh, I mean, that should be against the law. I mean, that lack of humility in the face of all of these other biological organisms that have all these capacities and features that, you know, really do humiliate us.
A pea, or a little bit smaller, I guess.
So it has a pea brain. So it flits, and it's pea-brained.
We don't think that the sparrow is... pondering that tomorrow, you know.
How do you know what it's pondering? I mean, but let's understand, it must have the same kind of brain we have where, you know, something triggers and it says, oh yeah, I have to go do that. Oh yeah, I made an appointment to do this. And we remember that stuff. It it reoccurs and pops into our head. And so you can see birds doing exactly that thing. They'll fish in a certain area, you know, for worms or for this or for that. And then you can see something clicks. Ah, time to move. Go to some other spot. And then something else and something else. And then, you know, I mean, I saw a robin this year in front of a mirror, you know, and it kept, you know, it was like saying, okay, it kept flashing these, you know, macho signals. You know, it was a male. And the other robin in the mirror, you know, is flashing the macho signal. You know, and he's having this whole freaking contest with himself. And you're saying, well, you know, what do you think this brain is doing? I mean, it's calculating. It's trying to find an angle. It's trying to find a way to interact with this thing where it can get the, you know, the advantage, you know, the high ground. I mean, to minimize all that functionality as nothing, when that's all we're doing, we're just trying to navigate our environment. We get triggered. We see ourselves in the mirror, so to speak. We see some act by somebody, and it triggers us, and that's all it is. And triggered here, triggered there, trigger, 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 trigger. Well, let me. Here's the punchline.
It'll go to a different field. You know, we'll kind of work this field enough tomorrow. I'll go over there. The sparrow just is driven by...
This guy obviously doesn't know anything about sparrows, right? So he's just making this crap up. Oh, amazing.
Instinct and...
And Sapolsky, okay, so this guy is really, you know, he's a nature expert in some sense where he's done all this field work. 30 years, you know... sitting in a dirty, shitty environment watching baboons, which means you have to watch a lot of other animals. Okay, and he's just letting this shithead talk this nonsense.
No, I guess exactly what drives a sparrow, but they don't plan.
Says you. Where does he make that up, that they don't plan, that their brain doesn't plan, when you could argue that everything about what they end up doing has to be called a plan? Okay, I mean, you know, an agenda. They're certainly agenda based. Now, you know, they obviously don't have some big picture. You know, they're not, you know, they don't have all the facts that we have. They can't know that even, you know, they don't even know how they become capable of laying an egg, let alone caring for what hatches out of it.
Don't think. They don't have consciousness.
Oh, so there's the magic words too. What the fuck is consciousness? I mean, what is this? This is now another magical word, right? Consciousness doesn't mean that you think and feel. Somehow consciousness is something else besides having feelings, you know, having desires, motivating impulses, being able to smell something that smells good and something that smells bad, right? Could call that a feelings in a way, or emotions, and then doing calculations about, you know, should I throw the first punch, you know, should I come from the left or should I come from the right? Strategy, isn't that all there is? Impulses and strategies. And he's basically saying somehow they don't have impulses and strategies. Oh, come on.
They don't bemoan.
He's nodded his head. He nodded his head. I mean, it's just too silly. They don't bemoan. They look like they get afraid. They look pretty much like they could get sad and they could be happy. You know, there's times they're feeling good and times they're not feeling so secure. What a pile of shit.
The planet getting warmer, or cheer it, depending on what climate, part of the climate they're in. They're oblivious. They're trees. They're no more. They're sentient in a way that a tree is sentient, but a tree.
A tree? Do you see? He just compared a bird to a tree. I mean, how can somebody know the difference between a $5 bill and a $10 bill and not know the difference between a tree and a bird? I mean, a tree has no neurons. Zero. It doesn't have any reflexes. A bird has millions and millions, hundreds of millions. Birds might even have a billion, I don't know. Neurons. They have a ton of them. They have a ton of computer space in which to create this machine that does all of these fancy functions. They migrate thousands of miles, and this idiot is saying it's a tree. You're just like, how can somebody do that? You know, with a straight face. They're trees. I have to take a break. But I mean, just trees. I can't get past it. So should he be allowed to continue to function is my argument almost. I mean, are you allowed to say something that stupid and then be allowed to say anything about anything at all? I mean, isn't this like a poison apple in the pie? I mean, if you have an idea so fucking dumb and distant from reality, should you really be part of the stream of conversation anymore? Because you're just so unreliable. I mean, that's a nuclear fart. I mean, that is such a pile of shit. You know, to throw into human conversation about reality. Anyway. And Sapolsky just sits there and takes it. I don't know how he's not triggered by everything this moron just said and just says, wait a minute, I can't start with that premise. It's too silly. Birds are not trees. All right, so I will try to carry on. But this is the part that's just so, deflating, depressing, just, I mean, if this all has to be corrected, I mean, if we can't just say, if nobody's going to agree that, okay, I shouldn't have to convert him, I shouldn't have to fix him. You know, if I have to fix all the stupid before we can agree, then this is a dismal prospect, because how do you even go about fixing such a stupid statement? I mean, do you really, where did he not know about what a neuron is, what a brain is? I mean, how can he possibly confuse something that has a brain with something that doesn't have a brain? I mean, amazing. How could he think the brain isn't the essential organ when it comes to consciousness? I mean, how can you miss those facts? So you can't really miss them. You have to be belligerently hostile to them. Because you really can't miss them. You have to assassinate them somehow. And so then you have to find the reason why he found justification for assassinating something, an idea so fucking obvious, that we are neurons. We're electricity. We're not the phenomenon of a living thing. We're made of living things. We're made of living cells in a community. Cells that are slaves, essentially. Livers and kidneys and all these little cells are slaves to this organism. Their entire function is designed for the purpose of them just pulling ropes, that keep the machine running. Nothing in it for them, so to speak. Just slaves to this electrical function, okay, that in turn produces this behavioral function that'll make the copy, okay, and perpetuate the machine. But that's it. We're just the electricity part. We're just a phenomenon happening in a bunch of electrical pathways. That's our essence. It's just those little sparks.
We'll turn to the sun and
Turn to the sun. I mean, these aren't even true statements, frankly. Most trees don't turn to the sun. None of this crap happens. Certainly the tree doesn't do it. And at best, the leaves themselves might have some capacity to wither, to deal with the fact that it's dry conditions or too hot or it's too this or it's too that. And they have little chemical reactions that take place, not electrical reactions. That cause a dehydrating function or a hydrating function, you know, open a little tiny water valve. So he's comparing a bird brain, okay, to this simple, oh, it's a little water valve controlled by, you know, how much, you know, salt is in the water around it. And it could restrict based on how much salt is. I mean, it's amazing that he could make, that he could premise an argument with such a preposterously silly idea that birds are just like trees.
A sparrow will look for food and...
Does a tree look for food? Shit.
Those are just fundamental urges that biological...
They're just fundamental urges that are exactly the same as ours. So he doesn't get the humans are bird thing, but he gets the birds are tree thing. Do you get it? He can't see any connection between a bird and a human, but he sees this gigantic connection between a bird and a tree. I mean, isn't that disqualifying nonsense? Can you still be credible as a human being talking about any subject if you say something that stupid? I mean, isn't that dumber than flat earth? I mean, I put on a scale somewhere. Come on. That's dumber than
nature. And so in your view, human beings are no different. We flip from here to there. We're just simply cursed.
We're no different than trees now. You know, the bird is a tree and we're just flitting, so we're trees too. So that's what's Spakowski is being basically pigeonholed by this guy into somebody who's saying, because we're robots, we're let me just try to think of the simplest robot imaginable. You know, or one of those bird things that dips into the water. You know, that's what we are. You know, no, that's not the consequence of being a robot. Being a robot doesn't mean that we're just a hunk of glass with a sponge on the end of it. That's not what we are. Clearly, we are sentient. We are capable of experiencing a whole complex thing called a consciousness. A tree is not. A bird is. We are. Okay? So all birds are is ignorant. They're not even retarded. Okay? They're just ignorant. And there is a difference. Their function isn't backwards or broken. Their function is just ignorant.
With the gift of consciousness, to have the
gift of consciousness. What the hell is consciousness? If a bird doesn't have it, how the fuck do we have it? What is there different about us than the bird? So he has some notion that our brain is doing something the bird's brain isn't doing. And he just conceded that Spakowski is basically saying, no, we're just doing what the bird's doing.
Illusion that we are not sparrows. But I don't think we are sparrows. We're something more than a sparrow.
Says you. And again, the something more is just knowledge. Without our knowledge, just go back in time. What do you think the cavemen were doing, right? What do you think they were living some sort of high life or something? They were doing something different than a sparrow. They were, I mean, clearly, all they did was kill each other, okay? They had all kinds of, the same as the baboons. There were no, I don't know why he didn't make the comparison to a baboon. I mean, the guy studied baboons for 30 years, so why not just try to explain how baboons aren't just like humans without intelligence, you know, without knowledge. How humans behaved fundamentally differently 2 million years ago. No, they didn't behave fundamentally different. Even though they had a big giant brain, even though they were capable of going to high school and learning and doing all this stuff and having a culture, you could have raised one. You know, you could take a baby, a human baby from 2 million years ago, and you could put it in a you know, clothes and in a school, and it would learn. Now, I don't know if it would be exactly, pseudo cum laude and all that kind of crap. It probably ain't going to win trophies for how quickly it grasps, but it's going to acquire a great deal of knowledge because it has the capacity to 2 million years ago that it wasn't fucking using, plainly. Because it hadn't developed a language and it hadn't developed, it was in the Helen Keller phase. It had the capacity to do language, but it didn't have a language to do it with. And that's the irony. We basically had a great deal of functionality we couldn't utilize until it got that key piece of code, which was language, which made it so much more efficient in terms of how it utilized all of that extra capacity.
Is our consciousness and this difficulty we have of accepting that there is no regret, that regret is foolish?
So this guy just makes all these pronouncements. There's no regret. I mean, regret is one of the things we do really well. Regret is how we basically understand reward and punishment, how we impose it on ourselves, in the sense of conditioning ourselves out of thinking it's a good idea. We can make things that we thought were good ideas into things that we're comfortable with, into things we're very uncomfortable with through that very concept of regret. All of a sudden, you know, we can hurt a girl, you know, and break her little heart, and then a little later we can see our own sister going through the same experience or something, and somebody could say, shit, what an asshole I was. How ignorant and stupid I was. That's a perfectly reasonable part of the process of becoming smarter, is recognizing where you failed to get reality right in the past. And now you can get it right in the future because you have learned. I mean, this guy is so stupid.
That right and wrong are meaningless.
Just so insane a statement that right and wrong are meaningless. How could it ever be meaningless? How could the idea of bad, that is the plague, how could that ever be meaningless? You know, plague versus cupcake, nail in the eye versus a cupcake. How could it be meaningless? How could that ever be meaningless? Just because I'm a robot, all of a sudden I can't figure out that a nail in my eye is a lot worse than a cupcake? That I can't figure out that pain isn't still pain? Because I'm a robot, pain isn't pain anymore? Suffering isn't suffering anymore because I'm a robot, therefore suffering isn't a negative event in the universe? I mean, it's so stupid. Oh, fuck. I can't get past just how stupid it is. And so that just... How could some... again, you know, the guy has all these books behind him, all of this pretense that he takes being smart, like he's proud of it. You can almost see that he's probably very proud of it. Probably has a little sticker on the wall about some degree or some kind of bullshit. And be this, to say things this ignorant. That, oh, because we're robots, all of a sudden torture doesn't exist. No, that's not what being a robot. We are robots that feel. He says free will, no free will doesn't mean you can't feel anymore. I mean, how could you get even that confused? How could you confuse free will, whatever the fuck that is, by the way, our intelligent will, with the idea that somehow that changes feelings? It doesn't change anything. Doesn't make us non-feeling.
That judgment is a mistake. That's just something that's going on in our brains that has no real significance for the data. It's just noise. Is it relevant at all?
So what did he just say there? I mean, that was just mush. It's what relevant? That you're incredibly stupid? Yes, well, you're incredibly stupid would be profoundly relevant, because this is, you know, democracies, all of that kind of crap. You're just basically driving the lowest common denominator standards even lower and lower. I mean, if the smart people can't be smart, holy shit, are we in trouble.
It's relevant insofar as believing in that then shapes your behavior.
So what did he just say? Believing in that shapes your behavior. Why didn't the first thing he should have said was, what the hell were you just saying? You think birds are trees? Come on. What are you saying?
Rejecting that shapes your behavior in other ways. It in and of itself, you know,
So again, he's accepting the premise that somehow believing that you don't have free will, that you're a robot, that somehow that does mean you can't distinguish right from wrong. Because we don't have free will, somehow we can't calculate good and bad outcomes. That we can't rationally calculate good and bad outcomes because we're robots. No, that's exactly what we're robots that have. That's exactly our robotic function. Our exact robotic function is to ascertain the environment and create solutions. Program solutions. You know, they call that like in submarine lingo. You know, they have a solution for their torpedo attack. And that's all you're doing, right? You're just calculating a solution of this is the best answer to this environmental circumstance in terms of how should I poke this? You know, should I run away? Should I run away or shall I try to pop the bubble? And it, you know, you have a solution. You have a pin, and you say, "I can pop it because I have a pin. If I didn't have a pin, I wouldn't bother trying. But because I have a pin, I'm going to go ahead and do it." I mean, it's just calculating solutions. And how does any of those calculations? How are any of those calculations at all changed by recognizing the fact that I have been programmed by my environment? And the environment has, in many ways, decided whether I had an interest or I didn't have an interest, that I, you know, that I did live my life acquiring knowledge or didn't live my life acquiring knowledge, these kind of things. Nothing is fundamentally changed by just recognizing that I am the byproduct of what knowledge I have acquired as a computer. I function based on how much spidering of the environment my computer has done. How much has it gone out and touched the crap to figure out where I am and what I'm doing. And so I have more competence because I've analyzed the problem and devised solutions.
You listen to a lecture like this and you consider it like raving gibberish.
Yeah, so why didn't he just say that? What you just said is raving gibberish, okay? Trees are not birds. Birds are, yes, they're not humans, but frankly, the only distinction, again, is intelligence. They're lacking the information. They have a brain capable of processing information. They just don't have any place to, they haven't been privileged with the mechanics that allows that to happen. So again, I could argue there's such obvious things about humans, you know, that are different than all the other simians. And one of them is this very slow maturation. I mean, it takes forever to raise, you know, for a human to become even marginally functional is at least 3 years, you could argue. For it to be marginally, I mean, just, you know, basically walking and babbling. Where other primates are, you know, 3 years, you're already an old man in some respects. You're indistinguishable from an adult, where humans is not even close to being indistinguishable. And that's the process. That's the thing you need. That's the thing an organism needs, is to have an open, to be born retarded. But other creatures can't afford to be born retarded, because the gazelle has to be able to run within 15 minutes of being born. I mean, it's got 15 minutes to grow up, you know, become as functional as the adult. 15 minutes, you know, where we're given 15 years, frankly. We're given 20 years to barely learn how to wobble across the field.
And the process of deciding it's raving gibberish has caused changes in your brain. You can spot neurons there that are now working differently, or the process of deciding, wow, that makes perfect sense and I'm depressed as hell. That makes somebody sneezes in the room and 1.5 hysterically hypersensitive neurons will work a little bit differently afterward instead of something really.
So what all this hypersensitive neuron thing is, there's no hypersensitive neuron. There's just these, it'd be obviously be a bunch of neurons that could create, a light trigger or a very dull trigger. Then that gets into all your moods and the chemistry of your moods and how much adrenaline or other hormones are running through you, about how triggerable all that stuff is going to be. And yeah, all that nuance is all part of being the liability of walking this tightrope. You know, is that you have to be functional. And it's sometimes difficult to be functional because we have to do more than one thing. You know, it's like we're playing a little game with our fingers, and then we're trying to walk on the tightrope, and then we have to keep our balance, and we have plates on our head, and you know, there's all these different things. We have to play the social game. You know, you have to deal with the fact that you have this biorhythms. You know, these sequence of hormonal attacks, okay, designed to compel you to do certain things, you know, that are going to be, that over the time of evolution have purpose and function, but don't have any function to us in civilization. I mean, in civilization, we'd rather just push the button. I mean, we'd rather just have, yes, make me relaxed because I don't have to do anything, and it's, you know, I'm going to get romantic, I'm going to do this, so just hit the relax button. But we can't do that, you know, because we're still slaves to that biology. So people use drugs to try to modify and control the fact that the biology still hasn't caught up to, it's still 2 million years old. The biological systems are really archaic, and they haven't caught up with the fact that we have imposed efficiencies, you know, of time, the right time and the wrong time for different events to take place. You know, you know, to gain the efficiencies in terms of like an assembly line or some other kind of function. That's what civilization does, is to try to find these efficiencies and take advantage of them. And so our modern life really doesn't fit with our, you know, 2 million year old physiology.
Substantial, but it's exactly on that level. And what you wind up seeing then is, you know, this is virtually, this is a metaphor. We like the sparrows and like crabgrass and blue whales.
So why are you putting all this stuff together? We like the sparrows and the crabgrass. I mean, it really is a gigantic difference between something with a brain, talking about will, or even talking about the burdens of being alive, you know, what aliveness is. I mean, grass is not in any way brainy-abled. It's not, it can't possibly be alive in any kind of similar way to what you consider your aliveness. My aliveness has absolutely nothing to do with having skin and tissues and bones and all that crap. So I mean, it's just so silly to make. Why would somebody ever start a sentence this way? Like the sparrows, the crabgrass, and the blue whales. What are you setting me up for? How is that a rational grouping? In what way is that a rational group?
Holes and trees and all of that.
The trees. Okay, so we got crabgrass, trees, sparrows, and whales, and somehow they're all in the same category. How could they possibly be in the same category? It's just not possible for somebody to do this.
We are biological machines that interact with environment.
Okay, there you go. So that little minimum, oh, we're all biological machines. But obviously a machine like, they're not even toasters, you know what I mean? They're machines in such a simple way, like a hammer. You know, a hammer is a machine, you could argue, but it doesn't have any, you know, there's nothing to the machine. It needs the environment entirely to create its function, where these other instruments or machines, some of them can react, and then some of them can act. You know, the difference between the act and the react is, you know, it's the same difference, but obviously the act requires you to process a whole bunch of action, a bunch of reactions. and calculate a reaction.
But the difference with us is we're the only biological machines that know our machineness.
Okay, so again, I think that's being a little presumptive in the sense that you're saying that no other primate or whale or any other organism, it never even occurred to them to say, what the fuck is going on? I'm thinking it might quite possible, just because it was one of the first things that came out of my mouth was, what the fuck? I mean, that's one of my first conscious memories, was that what the fuck reaction, looking out a window for the first time, looking outside, what the fuck? My brain did that. It didn't say what the fuck, obviously, but it definitely had a what the fuck moment.
And thus can view feelings and intentions for real things.
No, we can strategize, we can process, we can argue, we can refine, we can magnify, we can in all kinds of ways analyze the environment, the circumstance, the truth, the group of facts. And that's the extent of our difference, is that we analyze facts. Reacting, having a feeling, they're all doing that, except for, of course, the trees and the crabgrass. Okay. All the other animals are doing the feeling thing. The feeling thing is really old evolutionarily. It came with the first brain. I mean, it's one of the first things the first brain probably did, was create reward and punishment through creating ouch, okay, and using the whip. I mean, it's a really old function. Nuclear physics is a new function. I mean, being able to process a great deal of information, build a computer, that's the new stuff. The old stuff is the feeling part. And if you're going to argue about what's the nature of us that makes us valuable, it's the feeling part that makes us capable of worrying for each other. And the rest is just utility. How much utility do you have? And the utility, I would argue the only way you answer that question is to say, well, we have to do a whole bunch of processing, because you have to figure out your utility to the future. Because frankly, the future is so much bigger than the present. So if you're not useful to the future, then you're not useful.
And thus they become real things to us. That's the weirdness of us. I mean, sort of sparrows. I remember I was in a lecture once.
I just don't know why he didn't just say, look, I completely disagree with your premise that there's anything similar between a tree and a sparrow. Fundamentally, functionally different things. 100 million years separation between their functions. Hundreds of millions of years of difference in evolutionary transformation of function.
A guy who studies Alzheimer's disease, it was the Alzheimer's conference, and he put up this slide showing the fruit fly and the human, and showing we've got like half our genes in common, and with the exact same structure to this enzyme and the neurons, you take a fruit fly neuron and you take one of ours and you put it under a microscope, and they're like, you can't tell them apart. They look the same, they taste the same, they smell the same.
They taste the same. So you're just like, what? No one tasted these neurons. That's just not true. So anyway, yeah, I don't know what to say to what he's doing here, okay? Because again, he's going to make this argument that somehow this is about how many neurons we have, when I think it's clearly about this key functions, just key functions. And vocabulary is a key function. And the argument could be made that, yes, you need a lot of brain space to be able to create a language associated with literally thousands and thousands of things. You know, to be able to associate blue with water, and then blah blah blah, you know, and to give that word blue meaning, you know, it has to be connected to all the different blue sky, blueberry, it has to be connected to all these different blues. All right, so yes, that takes brain space that isn't being used for something else, and that's another one of my arguments, is that you can sort of see that's what happened to us, that we compromised our functionality at birth. I mean, completely annihilated it, right? Turned our babies into pretty much just worms. They're so dysfunctional. So obviously no pre-programming. So we've left the space open for the associations to take place, where, you know, the other simians, they have the get-to-it programs, the climb trees, do all this stuff, learn how to do all this stuff program. Running, occupying the space, you know. So we have that slow maturation. We're born crippled, we're slowly maturate, and then our senses, you know, are kind of dull, right? I mean, the range of sound, the range of odors and smells that we can detect versus these other animals, way below. So obviously we've given away some of our sensual data also, our capacity, what the brain would be using or utilizing. So that's the difference. But it's not just, you can't make some statement that it's just a number. Oh, well, how many neurons you have decides how good a machine you are, how well you calculate. It really isn't. It's about how it's organized. You could have a computer with, you know, billions of gigabytes of storage, but it's running Windows. Yeah. It's got a shitty operating system. You know, and then you could have something that if you gave all those gigabytes to an Android or some other thing that was a better, more cleaner operating system, you know, that it would get so much more out of it. So that's the real point, is how much you're getting out of it, how much, you know, and to argue that these smaller brained organisms aren't insanely functional, I think would be, it's just so ignorant. Because there's an insane amount of functionality. They really do survive, and they survive in a manner that we couldn't do. We couldn't manage it. It's not, you know, intelligence is an advantage, and it's something to be utilized. But this idea that you're going to sit there and pretend that it makes us substantially different than other organisms is just, it's as fake as a flat earth theory. That's a fake notion of reality.
Whatever. And whoa, but look at what we do with our neurons. What's the difference? And
we torture, we breed animals for our comfort and exploit them and torture them. Why don't you talk about that? That's what our big brain came up with as a great idea. Let's torture feeling things. That makes good sense. No, it doesn't.
The difference is that we have 100 million neurons for every single one that a fly has.
I know, but just imagine how poorly ours are functioning. He just said 100 million. I think that's an exaggeration, frankly. It's not 100 million to one. But anyway, just imagine all the functionality that fly has. It can move all of these. It has more appendages. It has antennas, right? It's sensing the world with this complex visual matrix. It has, you know, other sense thingies that do all kinds of smelling and other kinds of crap. And then it navigates through the air. It flies. It's able to, you know, sense all of this air pressure data and all this other kind of crap. Oh, come on. And you're going to talk about how your special big brain is doing something more magnificent? I mean, come on. Such garbage.
You get this thing of an emergent complexity, an emergent process.
Right. But the fundamental core complexity is feeling and strategy. Feeling and strategy. That's the part that goes all the way down. And that's all we're doing. That's what this whole point of this frickin' free will argument is. Is that that's all we are. Is impulse and a strategy to deal with that impulse. What's the best way for me to get what I want, fundamentally? And you can clearly see that's all that animals are doing, and that anything that inhibits them from being insanely cruel is, again, just some sort of evolutionary check against, sort of making sure you kill things that don't have your genetic code, okay, and you protect things that do share your genetic code. I mean, come on. But it's just feel and act. And the actions, we can do more complex processing of the action path. We can draw a more complex map of the reality and have a more complex strategy. And that's it. But the feeling thing, the core, isn't any different.
That throw enough neurons together and stuff comes out that defines primateness. And throw about five times as many neurons together and stuff comes out that characterizes the species.
All right, so that this is just disappointing because, again, it really isn't about brain size. And you're going to have to argue that, you can argue about there was some people that were only like a foot and a half tall, and their brain didn't weigh 3 pounds and all of this kind of crap. And you could argue that, well, how the fuck could they be just as smart and all this other stuff? So, I mean, this whole thing about, I think it's just wrong-headed to think that it is merely add more neurons and you add some sort of greater amount of aliveness. The neurons aren't making the aliveness.
Comes up with?
I mean, the number of neurons aren't making that. That's already happening in all the other organisms. All the extra neurons are doing is providing a capacity to do the more complex thing of an association language. It's probably a better word to use than association. But it is just word association. So you're establishing a word and making it associate with a bunch of images and sensations.
Theology and aesthetics and economic systems, and we know the nuts and bolts biology as to why we have three times as many neurons as a chimp does. It's got something to do with some genes that were duplicated.
Three times now. So it was five times before, now it's three times.
Duplicated evolutionarily, but like we know that. And what that leads you to is, if you gave a chimp three times as many neurons as it currently has, that increased quantity would invent human-like quality.
Well, again, see, that's the argument, right? And my argument would be is that's not what you have to do. I mean, what you have to do is slow down its maturation. So the trick is that, they did that with Coco the gorilla, right? They tried to teach it sign language. But the trick is they just didn't have enough time. It grew up too quick. So if you could make it mature slower and give yourself more time, it's just like older people have a much harder time learning a language than a young person, a kid. So that's the advantage you were losing. And so the fact is if they could slow down how fast it maturated, then they could have gotten a lot more performance out of it in terms of it maybe would have actually learned the sign language instead of just doing a mimicking thing. It would have really understood in the Helen Keller way. I mean, there was a moment where Helen Keller went from not getting it at all to getting it. And that was the moment where she realized the sign meant water. And that this sign meant tree. And that this sign meant grass. And so as soon as she realized they were associations, that the word meant the thing, all of it fell into place. And that's the thing that's missing for simians. Now, I'm not saying that they would, again, graduate from college and all that kind of stuff if you could give them a language. But the fact is, it really isn't about brain size. It's not the number of neurons. It's how well they're organized. I mean, damn, frankly. I mean, damn it. This moron over here thinks a tree and a sparrow are the same kind of organism. It's the same kind of machine. I mean, does it matter how many brain cells he has? If I gave him twice as many brain cells, does that mean he'll be able to figure out he's an idiot? I mean, obviously that idiocy shouldn't be there. There's no excuse for something with billions of brain cells making a mistake that egregious. There's no excuse for it. There's no explanation. Yeah, it's so stupid. A cricket could figure this out, you know, if you gave him the language and the blah, blah, blah. I mean, again, it's... I mean, I've used these examples before, but again, if what if Tyrannosauruses got intelligence first? Okay, that they are the that they were the organism you know, where the brain clicked and did the language thing, and they became intelligent. They would be able to figure out, hey, we're really built to be shitty, aren't we? You know, our whole evolutionary function really is retarded. And so, yeah, let's not be grotesque, okay? And so they would learn what civilization is. They would learn what pain and suffering is. And they would learn, why would we harm the other creatures in the environment? Why would we think we can enslave them to our, you know, food preferences? Why would we do any of that cruelty? We're smart. Yeah, why would we be stupid? Why would we behave stupidly? So you could imagine them with their little arms, with their teacups, you know, smoking a cigarette, and, you know, I mean, come on. Yes, they would do what intelligence requires, all right, which is gain some sophistication in your function to understand efficiency, to understand the simple efficiency of, well, if I'm making my gain out of something else's pain, that's not profitable, econ talk guy. I can't make a profit that way. That's not winning. That's losing. You know, if I'm making more down arrows than I'm making up arrows, right? I'm not going to float the boat, so to speak. If I'm drilling more holes in it than I am knitting sail. So, come on. Shouldn't have to be said. But yeah, what do we do about it? That's the tricky part. What the fuck do we do about the catastrophic dysfunction that takes place among people who are supposed to be intelligent? I mean, they have every appearance of having gained some knowledge, and yet they can brain fart in such amazing ways that it's just the one foul dysfunction overwhelms anything that could come out of their brain that'd be worth listening to. All right. No. Enough of a video, I guess I'll say. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. We'll just continue this kind of stuff. I mean, this is an important conversation. It's good that this guy is talking to everybody on the internet. Most of what he says is good stuff. But again, you know, doing this, it happened from birth crap is pretty much crap. Nurture is still huge. Okay, and nature's tiny in terms of the what's going to decide what kind of asshole you're going to be, I mean, it's just really bad for him to almost, he's giving way too much room to all of the, you know, the really stupid, you know, like Muslims are Muslims because they're born to be Muslim or something. I mean, that is just ends up getting into all these kind of it becomes an admission, you know, that people who want to pretend that there's something fundamentally broken with a certain kind of people, you know, and that's really, again, it's just such a wrong-headed it's just such a bad piece of data to think that that's what matters, when what matters is what people are saying in videos. What matters is what people are saying, okay? And if people keep making excuses for bad function, the message is clear. Go ahead and function badly, because we'll make excuses for you. I mean, that is not sensible reward and punishment. You're basically training your kids to be deer hunters. All right, anyway, till the next time and such, so forth.